Blog Talk Radio.
Gentlemen, this is the 411 Ground and Pound Radio Show, your weekly look into the wide, wacky, wonderful world of mixed martial arts. Thank you also very much for tuning in, be it live or after the fact. Benefit of on-demand audio, folks. It's there whenever you want it. Doesn't have to be live. I appreciate you if you listen live, because I appreciate all the listeners, but you can listen to it whenever. Beauty of on-demand audio. Great thing. I'm Robert Winfrey. I'm your host for the evening. And... well, we've got some stuff to talk about tonight. First up, we need to talk about last night's fight night, I mean UFC 204. Ugh. I say that not because I forgot it was a pay-per-view, but because the quality of the card was more
good
fight
card.
Night quality than pay-per-view quality. It was a good night of fights, all things considered. Certainly not as bad as I was afraid it was going to be, but... I don't know. I mean, unless you're romantically or nostalgically attached to the main event, I don't think this was worth the $60 that it would have cost for pay-per-view. But that's just me. And my heart is, I've confirmed it's made of stone and Shoggoth blood, so I might be the statistical outlier here. We will also be talking about the cancellation of UFC Fight Night 97. That was supposed to be this coming Saturday from the Philippines, but... that event is no longer scheduled. Old Man Penn got injured, had to pull out, and the rest of the card was so bad that it wasn't even worth keeping as a Fight Pass exclusive event. So we'll be talking a little bit about that. And we might wax poetic about the now-finished career of Dan Henderson, who retired after the main event last night. Now, if any of that strikes your fancy, if you've got a question or a comment or something along those lines that you would like addressed on the air, I'm more than happy to take live callers. We go live every Sunday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The number to do so is 323-657-0901. Once again, 323-657-0901. If you would like to call in using Skype, I'm not sure if you can yet, because Skype and Blog Talk have a contentious relationship. However, last time I checked, there is still a Skype icon. If you're on the Blog Talk Radio player page, it's on the top of the player, off-center to the right. Click on it. There's some boxes of dialogue you're going to have to click through. If all goes well, you will come up in my switchboard, and I will get you on the air. I can't vouch that that method will work. It hasn't worked for me for a while, but you're more than welcome to try, and I wish you the best if that's the line you wish to take. All right. Here with me, as always... and I'm very glad he was able to make it. I know this is a very rough time for him because we have Dan Henderson's biggest fan, Jeff Harris, here with us as always. Jeff, I know last night must have been rough for you. Not even facetiously. I know that you're just a huge fan of Dan Henderson. Apart from that, how are you doing?
Whatever.
All right. Let's jump right into the main event. I'm going to... get the results out of the way, then I'm going to let Jeff have his say, because I know he's got some things he wants to say about this fight in particular. Michael Bisping defeats Dan Henderson via unanimous decision to retain the belt. The scores were 49-46 and 48-47 twice. I scored the fight 48-47 for Bisping, just throwing that out there. However, this is one of those times when I have to throw my disclaimer here. Scoring while live blogging is a deeply imperfect method. Frequently, I have rewatched fights and scored them differently when I'm not, again, live blogging the event. So I'm not sure if that will hold up upon rewatching, but I'll only know once I watch it again. But that's I feel that's generally an accurate score. So Jeff, let's go ahead and I'll let you have your say. Then I'll kind of fill in what my thoughts after you're done with this. What did you think of this main event?
Dan Henderson is the UFC middleweight champion. Everyone knows it. Robert Winfrey knows it. Grumpy Pants, Robert Winfrey knows it. Dana White knows it and said so last night. We have a new UFC middleweight champion, and he is the greatest fighter of all time. His name is Dan Henderson. Effective damage, knockdowns, all with Dan Henderson. The only rounds Michael Bisping effectively had last night were rounds 3 and rounds 5. Round 4 wasn't even that great of a round for him. Giving him 4-1 against Dan Henderson last night is nothing but hot garbage, hot boiled garbage. Those judges should be fired, and they should never be allowed to judge an MMA fight ever again. Dan Henderson won that fight. It's that simple. Michael Bisping is tough, and he took a hell of a beating, but his face got rearranged last night. And it's not just the face. It's not just the significant strikes. I mean, it's effective damage. Who had the more effective damage in this fight, Robert? It was Dan Henderson. Hendo is the freaking champion, but he doesn't get to end his career with the title because of this nonsense. And it is nonsense. You know it is hometown cooking to give Michael Bisping a decision of 4-1. You know this, Robert. I thought, without a shadow of a doubt, that if this went to the judges were going to give it to Bisping. But the absolute corruption for one judge to listen to the crowd and give him 4-1 is absolute. It is the epitome of nonsense. It's the epitome of corruption. Whoever that judge was, he should be forced to go to prison. And you know that's true. And deep down, even in your grumpy McWinfrey pants, grumpy as you were about this fight, you know Dan Henderson is a young crown champion. Know it.
I've said it before. At the moment, I'm standing by my 3-2 rounds for Bisping. However, I do agree with the 4-1 is
Andy Roberts.
It's tricky.
Andy Roberts is the incompetent judge that gave this fight 4 rounds to Bisping. It's offensive. It is appalling. Appalling.
The disputed round in the 4-1 scoring is actually round 2. Round 1 universally goes to Henderson. Bisping controlled the majority of it, but it was controlled but not like pulled away massively. And then with about a minute to go, Henderson wallops him upside the head.
Not much was really happening in that round. And Henderson was, it wasn't like Henderson was getting beat up.
No, he did very well. It was a very competitive round.
And he hit Bisping with leg kicks too. It wasn't like people tell me that Henderson only had 6 significant strikes last night. And I haven't looked at the CompuStrike yet, but I feel like Henderson threw a lot more than 6 significant strikes in this fight, well throughout it.
Over the course of the entire fight, yes, I don't think he cracked double digits between rounds 3 and 4, but round one, he was certainly in it.
How can you not give Henderson that second round?
Well, I'll tell you, I had to debate that actually, and I don't have a lot of time between updating processes when I put my scores in, but there's actually a pretty strong debate for a 10-8 first round for Henderson. I think he almost finished Bisping there. He walloped him. Bisping fell over, And Henderson jumped on him and tried to finish, but Bisping recovered relatively quickly, tied him up, and was able to survive. So depending on how close you feel that was to being stopped, that's where the 10-8 potentially comes into play. Round two was 4.5 minutes of Michael Bisping pot-shotting and sniping and just kind of working Henderson over from the outside. I actually think I wrote Henderson was almost a heavy bag for that round. Until the final 30 seconds, when once again he cracks Bisping in the head with a right. Now, this time, Bisping doesn't get close to being finished, but he does get dropped. And Henderson dives into his guard, Bisping ties him up, waits out the round. And this, again, I have the minute or so to kind of figure out where my scorecard goes between rounds. And I debated giving it to Bisping because 4.5 minutes of one-sided domination. I mean, look, if Henderson misses that right hand, he was outstruck so comprehensively in the second, it could have been 10-8 for Bisping. He got dropped, though, and I weighed that very heavily.
There's no way, there's no way, there's no universe, there is no planet, there is nowhere in any dimension or alternate reality you can score that 10-8 for Bisping before the knockdown. I'm sorry. That was not shaping up.
I don't think Henderson landed more than 3 strikes that whole round until that point. And Bisping was landing in the double digits. That type of disparity in effective activity.
One effective flurry that Bisping had after a blatantly cheating low blow that he blatantly threw because Henderson was giving him problems. And he went in there with a low blow, and then Henderson answered back with all the fury of America behind him and knocked Bisping on his ass. We won the second American Revolutionary War last night, Winfrey. And we annexed England, and we stole the sovereignty of England right out from under them in front of Manchester. England belongs to America now.
Anyway, so again, that second round, I can see giving it to Bisping. I really can. I don't agree. That's not how I scored it, but I can kind of understand it. Rounds three and four were all Bisping. Henderson
no
was
none.
Henderson gasped pretty hard for rounds three and four, and they were clearly Bisping's rounds. There's no discussion there. Henderson avoided the same kind of lopsided statistics that he got from the majority of round two, leading to them being 10-9s instead of even borderline 10-8s.
Round four was not a lopsided round, though. That was a borderline 10-10 round. It probably should have been a 10-10. What really happened in that round of note for Bisping in round four? Please educate us.
I don't remember. I don't remember much about this fight, to be perfectly honest. I just remember that at the end of round four, I didn't have to think about it. It was, okay, Bisping. Easy. I think he outstruck Henderson in that round by a margin of 2.5 to 1. And barring the, you know, few strikes that Henderson landed having a greater degree of efficacy.
How effective were those strikes? How effective and how were those strikes really significant strikes?
If you want to debate the what constitutes a significant strike, that's a different debate. In this instance, Henderson was just covering up and getting pot-shotted from the outside.
He ate a ton
of body kicks, I seem to recall, in that fourth round.
I'm looking at the fight metric for round four, and it says, if I'm reading this correctly, I think it's a margin of 51% to 34%. But I don't know. It didn't seem that high to me.
He wasn't. Bisping was more effective in round three in terms of getting more shots through, and Henderson visibly responding.
I thought rounds three and four. We are clearly for Bisping. Those are clear Bisping rounds.
Yeah, round five is where things get a little bit more tricky.
To me, round four is not a clear Bisping round, because if I'm looking at, yes, landed overall, round four is to Bisping, but what was actually, like, significant and like, really and legitimate to me was it wasn't a clear margin. I mean, this was a hometown cooking score.
Round five is the other kind of interesting round for to see how different people have scored it. Because, again, I had it all to play for in round five. I had them two rounds apiece, and two of the other judges had it two rounds apiece. That's kind of the interesting thing here. If Dan Henderson comes out and wins the fifth round, he wins a split decision and is the middleweight champion on his retirement night.
Now, can I read the media scores? I feel these are a little relevant because these were the other live scores other than Robert. Luke Thomas, MMA Fighting, scored at a 47-47 draw. Chris Nelson of Sure Dog scored at a 47-47 draw. Tristan Chris Fitfield, also with Sure Dog, scored at a 47-47. John Pollock of Fight Network, 47-47. That several outlets scored at a draw, and another several scored at 48-47 Henderson. And so we had some draw, some Henderson, and some for Bisping. Quite a few did for Bisping as well. MMA Junkie scored it for Bisping. Wrestling Observer, Bleacher Report, MMA Mania. One other reporter from Sure Dog had Bisping. ESPN, Phil Murphy had it. So I would say this is a pretty mixed. It was pretty mixed here. But
yeah,
if you give
Henderson a 10-8 first, it winds up being a draw. I think it's just kind of the way that plays out.
There's no way 49-46 is. It should not have even been allowable on any playing field.
Yeah, the fifth round, again, is kind of a contentious one. A few of the commenters scored that for Henderson. And
no. I saw that round as a clear Bisping round. That was clear. He did more damage in that round. He had more significant strikes in that round. And he hit Henderson with a knee. He was more active and did, I think, more clear damage in that round. Henderson, yes, Henderson was tired.
I think it's the pseudo takedown from Henderson in the fifth that kind of muddies the waters there, which it wasn't a real takedown. So
that wasn't even a takedown, and nothing happened. That's baloney. That's garbage. Okay, even I can admit that. Here's what I think Bisping does deserve credit for, and I think you have the credit for him as well. Is his gas tank is pretty outstanding.
Always has been. Always has been one of his strongest attributes is his conditioning.
And he was able to maintain a pretty high pace for five hard rounds. And I can almost see that for 48-47 score because, you know, he was the fresher guy. He finished the fight stronger. And in a title fight, that can be deceiving. It can affect the judges' scores. And Bisping had that in spade last night, and he was more ready to go five rounds than Dan Henderson was. So I'll give him credit for that.
The other thing that needs – there's two things that need to be discussed about in the wake of this fight. One, I'm just going to say I put this on Facebook, and I think I need to reiterate it here for the wider audience. The middleweight champion of the world, Michael Bisping, right, just squeaked out a decision against a 46-year-old man ranked number 13 who was 3-6
and the greatest MMA
last night.
Fighter of all time.
And 5 years ago, he got knocked out by him. And if that had been for the belt, we'd be having a different conversation. I'm talking about what happened.
It was 7 years ago, okay?
Okay.
It wasn't 5 years ago.
When Henderson was legitimately one of the best active. Now he's one of the best ever, but certainly not one of the best active.
Look, the game's about styles, Robert. It's about styles.
And the point being, your champion, theoretically the best guy in the division, barely got by a 46-year-old man with a shot chin, no cardio.
Okay.
Who was ranked number 13.
Can I just say something? How many times week after week have you posted something on Facebook, your perception of a fighter's abilities and skills, only for the next day for that to be completely turned around and basically dropped on top of its head?
Yeah, Aldo Tumanov made me look like an idiot last night. I'll eat that one.
I'm not saying you're an idiot, but I'm just saying, you know, we all have these prejudices. We all have these sort of heavy-handed opinions about fighters and their skill sets. And I think this game is just so nuanced and complex. It's more complex than we give it credit for, and even you give it credit for, Robert. And again, it's a style where any given night someone can beat someone, and I truly believe that.
It's very true. I mean, Michael Bisping is the middleweight champion after all.
And I mean, that's why, like, a fighter who's a complete unknown can come in this sport and beat someone who's ranked in the top five. That literally happened in 2008 when Junior Dos Santos made his UFC debut. No one knew about Junior Dos Santos. He was completely unranked on whoever was having rankings back then. And Fabrizio Verdun was seen as, like, the top contender for the heavyweight title, even over Brock Lesnar. And Dos Santos knocked him out in 90 seconds. That's just how crazy this game is. And what I mean is that the slightest mistake, the slightest margin of error can cost you the fight. And I guess what I'm saying is you have these views sometimes that are so heavy-handed, but I feel like you're not giving the game enough respect when you say these things sometimes.
Well, okay, let me finish my thought. And to a degree, you're correct. I don't always consider all of the variables when I have to do something like this. But let me ask not just you, Jeff, but everyone out there listening. After Bisping's performance last night, where, again, barely got that win, could have easily lost that fight. I mean, there are people who think he did. That's how close the fight was. And that was the 13th-ranked guy in the world, who had been finished in his last four losses, all by knockout. I mean, do you really, at this point, from a analytical perspective, is anyone out there favoring Bisping over any one of the top seven? And I don't consider Vitor Belfort top seven anymore after last night. But so, however, let me see if I remember.
Daniel
Cormier the rough...
did not knock out Henderson.
Oh, no, he submitted him. I apologize. That's true. That was a submission. I forgot about that. I didn't remember he lost to Cormier. I forgot that it was, you know, the prison choke. Because seriously, prison choke.
And Vitor Belfort, come on.
Vitor Belfort knocked him out.
PRTV
Vitor. Just saying that is the official result is kind of the point there. And yeah, I'll give you TRT Vitor. Of course, those were also TRT Henderson's, so at least it was still a somewhat even playing field. But I don't favor Bisping over Luke Rockhold in a rematch, Chris Weidman, Ronaldo Jacare Souza, Yoel Romero, Gegard Mousasi, or Robert Whittaker. I don't think he beats any of them. Now, that's not to say he can't. He clearly can. He has beaten Luke Rockhold.
I don't know. I would favor him. I would probably favor him against Rockhold, honestly.
Now that bears some that does bear some discussion because, and look, we know Bisping's game at this point, generally speaking. We know what he's good at.
And,
we know what he's not good at.
And I think he'd probably mess up Belfort if they fought again.
Yeah, well, I don't consider this version of Belfort to be worth a title shot. He's just not that good anymore. But, I mean, honestly, I thought Anderson Silva beat Michael Bisping.
Right.
If they fought again, I'd probably still favor Silva.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the question about Luke Rockhold specifically, and this brings up an interesting point and something that needs to be addressed as far as how we think about things. Of all of Michael Bisping's fights, and he has the most wins in UFC history, he surpassed George St. Pierre last night.
Technically.
He has what, 5 finishes via strikes?
I'd have to go back and look. Let me see.
It's
one,
yeah.
Two.
It's not that many.
3, 4. He has more than 5 in the UFC.
Okay. But out of all those wins, he's not a powerful striker. He's a technical striker, and he's an accurate striker, and certainly a very volume-based striker, all of which are positives.
It looks like he has 10 UFC wins by knockout.
Really?
Yeah, because you have to figure, I mean, earlier in his UFC career, he was a light heavyweight. He was off the Ultimate Fighter, wasn't at middleweight. And he was fighting, you know, more unknown type of dudes.
Huh. Okay.
Like, you wouldn't, like, you probably wouldn't remember most of the guys he's knocked out. Like,
He stopped Josh Haynes to win it. He stopped
Eric
Elvis Senesek in, I think, his second fight.
No, his second fight was Eric Schaefer.
Oh, good old Red.
So, Elvis Senesek, Charles McCarthy, Jason Day. So, that's 5 right there. And then Dennis Kang, Jorge Rivera. So, that's 7.
Forgot the Kang fight was stopped.
Kung Lee is 8. Okay, so I think it's 9. Oh, and Jason Miller. So, it's 10. He's finished 10 fights by way of knockout.
Okay.
Strikes.
And of those, I think the only one that was that I'd qualify as a legitimate knockout is the one over Rockhold. I'd have to rewatch some
right.
of the other ones, but their volume, you know, he wears the guy down and beats him up, and that's a perfectly legitimate way to win a fight.
He's
I'm
not
knocking.
As I said
yeah.
last week, he's not a one-hitter quitter. He never has been.
Which begs the question, if we know he doesn't have that kind of raw power, but he knocks out Luke Rockhold, out cold. Has he simply
right.
been hiding this from the world, or is Rockhold's chin slightly iffy? And just nobody ever asked that particular question about him.
Well, I think what you're trying to do here is you're trying to belittle Michael Bisping's title.
No,
run.
I'm trying to belittle Luke Rockhold, actually.
Look, you know, Rockhold's an outstanding fighter, too. And
yes,
I don't
he is.
At this point, I'm just
questioning his chin.
Look, I think when guys are – look, with guys are that big and the small gloves and the way Rockhold was being very reckless with his defense and leaving his head wide open, I think a lot of fighters would have been able to capitalize on that, even if they aren't known for their knockouts, you know?
Yeah, and I bring that up also because he's going to be fighting Jacare, and Jacare packs a bit of a punch. I had never questioned Rockhold's chin in the past, and now I kind of have to at least bring it into examination.
Well, I mean, we'll see. I mean, look, Henderson, his chin hasn't been looking great either as of late. And even now, even Bisping wasn't, you know, with his best punches and kicks, was not able to hurt Dan Henderson.
Yeah, which again,
Other than that, he did slow him down. He was able to slow him down, but he didn't. To me, he never really seriously hurt Henderson all throughout this fight.
No, the most he wobbled him a couple of times, but I think that was more balanced than it was Henderson being cognitively impaired. This does bring up the question, though. Henderson retired, and you know, one of the best ever. I'm not sure exactly where he falls on that category if you put a gun to my head and made me rank guys, you know, 1 through 100. But his resume is exceptional to the point of almost being unparalleled. And I hope he is able to enjoy his retirement. You know, I wish him the best. The question now becomes, with Michael Bisping, do you wait? Is he just going to get whoever looks more impressive in their upcoming wins out of the Weidman Romero and Rockhold Sosa pairings? Or do you give the guy an extended vacation, have the winners of those two fight each other, and then have that guy crush Michael Bisping? What would you do in this situation, Jeff?
Do you mean in who we match up Bisping against next?
Yeah.
I want to see Robert Whittaker fight for the title.
All right.
I think he's the dark horse of the division. And I feel like he fits from to a T, and I feel like he's not getting enough respect. He's not getting enough attention right now. I want to see him fight for the title. And I think that's a good matchup, really, for both guys. But I think he can win.
Yeah, those two were supposed to fight at UFC 194, I want to say. Might have been 193.
Right.
One of those two.
193, and it became, it was 193 in last November.
Yeah. And I'll tell you guys what I said then when we were talking about that. I was going to pick Robert Whittaker to beat Michael Bisping. And if they were to schedule that fight today for at some point down the line, I would still probably pick Whittaker. And I'd be happy to be – I mean, I might be wrong there, but I don't dislike that idea. I mean, you had Musasi on the same card who looked really great. I mean, it was against Vitor Belfort, but, you know, you take what you can get. I just want to see Bisping fight a top five guy next, give or take. I want to see him fight a deserving top of their game contender. All right, the co-main event. I kind of mentioned it already. Gegard Mousasi defeated Vitor Belfort via TKO in the second round. This went as expected. Mousasi was just more technical for the first round. Outstruck him, made him move, made him work, wore him down. Second round, takedown into transitioning between mount and back control and just pounded him out. This went exactly as expected. I don't know what anyone outside of Vitor's immediate family might have thought that this would have gone differently. Jeff, Musasi's on a 3-fight winning streak now. What'd you think of his performance over diminished Vitor Belfort?
It was a good performance, but it's nothing I didn't expect from Musasi and both of these guys. Musasi's looked good lately. I've been very impressed with him as of late. And first of all, we need to take Belfort out of the top 10 now, put Musasi in there instead. If Musasi keeps this up, he could be fighting for the title next year.
I was surprised that Belfort was still in the top 10. He's not been doing very good lately. The minor upset of the evening, Jimmy Manua defeated Ovin St. Preux via knockout in the second round. I don't know. This is weird because I don't feel like, from an analytical perspective, I don't think I have a handle on Ovin St. Preux. And I don't know why that is.
He looked like he had jet lag last night. I don't know if it's just me, but he didn't look really in that fight to me ever. He looked he looked tired, and he looked like he had jet lag.
Yeah, that's the best way to put it. He tried to strike, but Manoa was a slightly more technical striker. In the second round, Manoa did some really nice work with his left hook to the body, which set up the finishing sequence. And Manoa knocked St. Preux out cold. Now, the only problem
was fought. This was fought the whole time. I think up because sometimes we just we expect too much of Ovince St. Preux. I think he's overperformed in the past, but I think sometimes because of that, we've expected a bit too much of him, and now he's sort of evening out, as it were.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. The problem for poor Jimmy Manoa, I mean, you knocked out Ovince St. Preux, you're still not going to beat Ryan Bader. And if you're not going to beat Ryan Bader, you're not going to break through the light heavyweights caste system.
I mean, he could beat Ryan Bader. If he can keep the fight standing up, he could beat him, conceivably. But that's a tall order.
Yeah, if this was just a kickboxing discussion, yeah, he wipes the floor with Bader. But Bader is smart enough, generally, to know when he has to out-wrestle somebody. And Manoa's grappling game is...
Put him in there with... I don't know. You could put him in there with Shogun or someone like that. Or
Shogun wouldn't be the worst thing in the world.
I mean, Rogério Nogueira is still fighting. You could probably put him in there.
Little Nog is fighting Ryan Bader, actually, if memory serves.
I mean, you could... It might make sense for Manoa to fight the winner.
Did this schedule... No, because Gustafson was supposed to fight Little Nog. If he's not out for very long, you know, and you want to keep building Gustafson on the slightly slower schedule, Manoa looked pretty good. That hasn't he already beaten Manoa, though?
He did. That was after the loss to John Jones, I believe he beat Manoa. So you might not want to book that rematch just yet. I don't know. I'm thinking more along the lines of Bader or Rogério Nogueira at some point for Manoa.
Yeah,
but we'll see.
He can fight the winner of that upcoming fight between Little Nog and Bader. I'm okay with
that. Manoa looked good last night, so, I mean, that's the important thing.
He did. He looked. That's the best I've seen him look in the UFC.
I agree. And not that I think Ovince St. Preux is an elite fighter, but he's been a pretty decent fighter in the UFC. This was really the best win of Manoa's career so far.
Yeah. All right, at heavyweight, Stefan Struve defeated Daniel Omielanchuk with a Darce choke in the second round. You know, I need to say this. I picked Omielanchuk. If I'd actually, and this is on me, if I'd look up, I knew Struve would be bigger because Struve is 7 feet tall. I don't care what the UFC, I don't care that he doesn't like to be called 7 feet tall. He's 7 feet tall. And his body is filled out. He's now at the point where he's probably going to be cutting down to 265. If I'd actually looked up the physical discrepancies between these two, I might have gone the other way. Because on the feet, it played out pretty much like I thought it would. You know, at distance, Struve can't fight to distance. I don't know what it is. He can't fight long. He can't maintain distance. He kept letting Omielanchuk kind of push forward and hit him with hooks to the head. But when you have that kind of size discrepancy in the grappling area, it affords a lot more opportunities. Triangle chokes off of your back, or in this case, front chokes, Dar specifically, when your opponent doesn't respect the length of your arms that allow them to get the leverage and the grip that they need to finish that off. I'm not saying I would have gone the other way, but it would have given me pause in a way that I didn't, just kind of not knowing the exact dimensions of their physical differences. But good win for Struve. He'll never be a contender. There's just too many holes in his game that good fighters will exploit. But he got another win, so you know what? Good for him. I don't have anything against the guy. Jeff, what did you think about the old skyscraper upsetting, you know, making us look silly?
You know that Struve has 12 UFC wins now?
I wasn't aware of that specific number, but that's a little more than I would have gone maybe 10, but that's a fair amount of wins.
And how many losses? So that's 6 losses. So he's 12-6 now. I like Struve, and he definitely – he looked better. He looked a lot sharper last night, and this is probably the best he's looked since he came back, I think around last year, and actually got to fight again. Yeah, it's just hard for me to envision him becoming a contender because of those holes. But he looked good last night. His grappling was sharp and on point, and it wasn't a great fight, but, I mean, at least he finished it fairly early, so good job for Struve.
And for once, he didn't take a ton of damage. I mean, this might be the least amount of damage he's taken outside of that very fast win over Bigfoot.
Right.
And kicking
maybe
off the
put
main...
in there with Derek Lewis next.
I don't hate that. I don't hate that at all. Derek Lewis, certainly on his way up in the world. That'd be an interesting fight. Lewis has better grappling than most people kind of give him credit for. And
right.
Lewis is, and Struve hits pretty hard, and Lewis's chin is a little, I mean, it's heavyweight, so when I say it's a little iffy, it might just be because he's a heavyweight, but Struve likes to brawl. He'll brawl with you. That I like that.
Right.
That's a really good one.
I mean, they're not giving Struve that Stipe rematch. Yeah, he does have an impressive win over Stipe, but it ain't happening, son.
I mean, look, Stefan, you should take a lot of pride in the fact that after he lost to you, Stipe got much better and went on to win the title.
Yeah.
But a rematch with you goes entirely Stipe's way.
Look, Struve is really – he's going to – I'm not saying it's impossible, but he's going to have to pick up, you know, like at least three really impressive wins. And he just tends to always hit a roadblock, you know, throughout his career. So it's just hard for me to see that happening. You know, when he was on his best winning streak, after the, you know, after the fight with Stipe, he was matched up against Mark Hunt, and he got his jaw split in half. And then he got knocked out by Overeem, and he probably, you know, shouldn't have been fighting back then either. But, yeah, it's just hard for me to see.
It would take several key injuries to five or so heavyweights in relatively rapid succession. Which, however, is not to say it can't, because this is mixed martial arts, and it's crazy. All right, kicking off the main card, top featherweight prospect Mirsad Bektik returned to action after more than a year off. He crushed Russell Doane via submission in the first round. This fight was all Bektik from start to finish. Russell Doane gets a little bit of credit for fighting on very short notice and up a weight class. He's normally a bantamweight. But I told you guys before, I'm pretty high on Bektik's potential and his abilities. Really good entries into takedowns, good grinding, good clinch work, heavy top control, strong strikes from top position. He's not, I'm not saying, you know, give him a title shot yet, but he'll be a title contender. I don't think that's terribly in dispute, assuming he stays healthy and active. He just, again, ran over Russell Doane like a truck, which is what he needed after such a long layoff. He looked really good in the fight prior to this, but again, it was a while ago. And you know, it's good to see him get back on the winning side of things. Jeff, what did you think about this fight?
Bektik is awesome. Three words.
All right. Move Bektik up in competition next. He needs probably about a top 10 guy, somewhere in the like 8 to 11 range.
Stanis,
I don't know who
he is.
I'm down for that. Bermudez is in that same. Yeah, I like that fight. Bektik and Dennis Bermudez. As for Doane, well, he's lost four in a row. He could probably get the axe, and I don't think anyone would care. All right, on the prelims, Yuri Alcantara submitted Brad Pickett with a triangle choke in the first round. 2-minute fight, and it was pretty wild. Alcantara landed a really nice spinning back elbow that dropped Pickett. He got on top, went for the mounted triangle, rolled for that, transitioned to the armbar when Pickett defended. He readjusted back to the triangle, forced the submission. Some really good chain submission attempts from Alcantara in that finish. Alcantara is still a pretty good bantamweight. As for Pickett, he's got to be considering hanging him up right now. The man's got just years and miles on him. But if he sticks around, Brad Pickett's always good for a fight. Also at bantamweight, Damian Stasiak defeated Davy Grant with a nasty armbar in the third round. This thing hurt me just to watch. I mean, the elbow is a hinge joint. It only bends one way. And he just torqued Davy Grant's arm. Grant tried to fight out of it. That thing had to have been damaged. There has to be ligament damage there, if not, you know, bone damage. That was a nasty armbar. At welterweight, Leon Edwards defeated Albert Tumanov with a rear naked choke in the third round. This is the last time you will hear me talk about Albert Tumanov as a top welterweight. You see, it's one thing when you get out-grappled by Gunnar Nelson. Gunnar Nelson is a superb MMA grappler. In fact, in terms of just grappling, he probably beats the majority of the welterweight division, if not everyone outside of Damian Maia. That's just how good his grappling is. You get out-grappled by Gunnar Nelson, okay. Fair enough, Gunnar Nelson can make good grapplers look average. All right. You get out-grappled by Leon Edwards. We have a problem. And a significant one. So, until that hole gets fixed, this is the last time you... last week was the last time you will ever hear me talk about Tumanov as a top welterweight. Because apparently I was deeply mistaken. Lightweight, Mark DeCasey defeated Lucas Savesky in the second round with punches. This is a good performance from DeCasey. The guy had some hype behind him coming into this fight, especially in the local British scene. And he looked good. He survived being on his back for the first round and just kind of walloped Savesky with punches on the feet. Somebody to watch. Lightweight's a very stacked division. Someone to keep your eye on. At welterweight, Mike Perry knocked out Danny Roberts with a knee strike and punches in the third round. Mike Perry had some serious power, some decent diversity with his strikes. He's not just a puncher. He's got elbows, knees, and kicks. He also has terrible, terrible defense. No head movement, poor hand position, and his technique needs work. However, he's only, what, 9-0 now, I think? He's still a young guy in both age and fights, so those are things that he can work on. Those are just things he needs to work on if he wants to improve. And at lightweight, Leonardo Santos defeated Adriano Martins via split decision, 229-28 for Santos, 129-28 for Martins. This fight sucked. All right, Jeff... there were some good finishes. There were only two decisions the whole night last night. But out of that group of prelims, what stuck out to you? What do you want to talk about?
Leon Edwards got a good win over Tumanov. Tumanov, don't get upset over Robert Winfrey being McGrumpy Pants because he was hyping you up and you lost the fight. Everyone loses at some point. Yeah, you got to work on some things, but it happens to everyone. I was devastated by Brad Pickett's loss and seeing him get beat up by Alcantara, but Alcantara is a good fighter. Damian Stasiak looked very good. Mike Perry looked very good. So we know who we got to keep an eye on for some upcoming fights. But overall, I would say it was a pretty good card, and a lot better than McGrumpy Pants Winfrey is willing to give it credit for. I'm sorry, Robert, but you are being a bit McGrumpy Pants tonight.
In terms of action, it was fine. I just maintain that, you know, if you paid $60 for this,
I had a good time, but, you know, it's up to the, you know, you get what you pay for.
Yeah, that's true. If you enjoyed it out there, I'm glad you did.
The main event was an outstanding fight, and we all saw the greatest fight.
I did not enjoy the main event.
When the UFC middleweight title, we saw America win the second Revolutionary War and steal the sovereignty of the United Kingdom. So I think we have a lot to be happy about right now.
Just real briefly, I don't get people calling the main event a classic. I don't know. I might feel differently when I rewatch it. I was not terribly impressed.
It was technical. I mean, if technique's important to you and you talk about it a lot, there was a lot of technique going on in that fight.
Yeah, a lot of Bisping being very loose with his lead hand. I need to rewatch it when I'm not live blogging it to get a better perspective, but yeah, just I was not terribly impressed with that, but again, I'll rewatch it. My opinion might change. All right, that was UFC 204. Thanks to everyone who stopped by, who followed along with the live coverage, who read the post-fight report. For the varying opinions and perspectives, those of you who thought Dan Henderson won, for those of you who thought Bisping won, for you know, the few of you, I know there were a couple. We have a couple guys from the UK who have commented occasionally who were unhappy with the 3 a.m. local start time for the main card. Appreciate you guys reading, following along, commenting. And the fact that of all the places you could go for live blogs of a UFC event, the fact that you choose mine is perpetually humbling. So thank you all very much for that. All right. Before we go into the one piece of news I want to bring up specifically is the cancellation of UFC Fight Night 97. Jeff, what happened here?
My understanding is BJ Penn got injured and he was unable to make the fight with Ricardo Lamas. They couldn't find a late notice replacement, but I've also heard there was an injury with all the drug testing in the Philippines that was logistically, I don't know, difficult for the UFC to make happen, and I think that also prevented the card, so it was apparently not just the injury to Bisping.
Well, apparently there's an issue with the Philippines where if you either fail a drug test or are suspended for if there's a drug-related issue, they actually take your passport. At least that's what I heard.
BJ Penn, it's not happening, man. You're not – it's not happening. We need to stop this. Common sense needs to prevail. The UFC shouldn't let him fight again. This shouldn't happen.
Yeah, old man Penn getting injured should not surprise anyone. It's just – and he saved himself a beating because Ricardo Lamas was going to tune him up in probably the worst way possible.
Look, the lineup besides this fight was nothing to write home about. Derek Lewis was supposed to fight Marcin Tybura, but, that's not that big of a –
The next
fight.
Most interesting fight on that card was on the prelims between Ali Bagautinov and Kyoji Horiguchi.
Well, you also had Sam Alvey, Smiling Sam Alvey, fighting on this card, so there's that too. It was a fight pass card. It's mainly catering to the international audience, so I'm not too broken up about this. That being said, I do not think BJ Penn should fight again. It's not my decision, but that's just how I feel.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I appreciate that the man has competitive drive, but he's also 37. Well, he's only 37. Wow. I would have thought he was over 40 at this point. But, he's closer to 40 than 30. He's been stopped badly a couple of times, and he was trying to come back at featherweight against a top contender. That was a recipe for disaster. Every one of those fights from Fight Night 97 is going to be rescheduled, moved around to other events.
And all the fighters are compensated as well for the cancellation. So they're all probably getting their show money at the very least.
Yeah, and, you know, good on the UFC doing the right thing there. Which actually means I have next week off, which doesn't happen very often, but I'll take it. All right, apart from Fight Night 97 biting the dust, Jeff, what else happened this week? What's in the news that we got to talk about?
We saw the end of a career of a great man, the greatest man this sport has ever seen, the greatest fighter this sport has ever seen, a part of the greatest fight this sport has ever seen. Dan Henderson is riding off into the sunset. This sport is going to greatly miss him. Jeffrey is going to greatly miss him. So thank you for everything, Dan Henderson. You should have gone out with the title. I'm sorry you didn't. Everyone knows you should have. Even Robert knows it. You didn't, but deep down we all know that you are the uncrowned UFC middleweight champion.
Yeah, I'm not nearly the fan of Dan Henderson that Jeff is. I have zero emotional attachment to the man or his career. None of that is to say that he isn't one of the best the sport's ever seen. He absolutely is. Been a part of some great fights, some great moments. Still the only man to hold two different belts in two different weight classes at the same time.
First and only.
Well, we'll know more after UFC 205 because McGregor's got a legitimate shot.
It's not happening. Alvarez is going to destroy McGregor, so don't worry about that.
That's possible, but Eddie's chin is pretty exposed, and McGregor hits really hard.
We have our UFC 206 main event. Daniel Cormier is defending his title in a rematch against Anthony Johnson.
And
it is a rematch.
No one cares.
Whatever. I mean, Robert, you complained so
Sorry.
Much last week.
I know. The light heavyweight division just has me bitter at this point in time.
I know it's the light heavyweight division, but, like, you know, you talk about the validity and rankings and how disrespectful, you know, and how bad that matchup was last night. And here we have the champion fighting really the number one contender. It is Anthony Johnson on all the rankings. Look, John Jones is out of the picture right now. We have no idea when he's coming back.
Or if he's coming back.
Yeah. I mean, Johnson's the guy right now. He, even if it's a rematch, he rightfully earned this shot at Cormier. So
I know. From a meritocracy, this is the correct fight to make. Absolutely, 100%.
So there's that. So they are going to book, as of now, Sage Northcutt versus Mickey Gall is happening at UFC on Fox 22.
I am okay with that fight as well.
3-0 Mickey Gall is fighting 8-1 Sage Northcutt. I'm not crazy about the matchup, but, you know, it's a fight. I will see this fight. In more tragic news last week, we lost UFC veteran, fight promoter, MMA columnist and writer who had already written his own book. UFC fighter Josh Simon died at the age of 28. Details are still fairly scarce, but, and look, all the signs seem to point to the fact that it was some type of drug overdose. It was reported to be a suspected drug overdose, but we still don't, I mean, even that's not been confirmed yet. The report I read said the medical examiner was quoted as saying there will be no toxicology report because Damon was alive for days after he was found. The thing is, he was fighting for his life in a coma before he passed away. And after he was found, there are no suitable specimens to test. I don't know if that's true and valid, but that's what's been reported. And they're also saying there may be no definitive cause of death found. But it really, just kind of like with Shane Del Rosario, something tells me he had a bad drug overdose. And I'd be lying if I said these situations don't seem eerily similar. What happened to both of them. because they do right now.
Yeah, it's a substantial loss for the MMA community. Saman was a good fighter and had I haven't heard anyone say a bad thing about him. Even when he was alive, I didn't hear that many people, you know, say anything bad about him. I read some of his writing. He was had a very good head on his shoulders, knew how to write. And it sucks losing anyone that young. He's younger than I am.
Younger than me too.
It always sucks.
Scary. It's scary. What we may never know the cause. Look, it looks like a drug overdose, but that's not even been confirmed. So we might never even know what actually happened here. But it seems like it was a drug overdose, but none of that's even been corroborated or confirmed. But I don't know.
I'll say this. I won't be surprised if that's what it is. Until we know more, it could be something else.
He was a solid fighter. He was an exciting fighter. He tweeted that he had a fight signed on September 26th. So I don't know. I didn't even know if he was in USADA's testing pool, if USADA was testing him, if they could turn up anything there. Does USADA test for recreational drugs out of competition?
I do not believe that they do.
Okay, so I think they only test for that in competition, I believe, right?
Well, yeah, because they can affect performances from safety areas on those. But if you're out of competition, yeah, I don't believe they test for, stuff like cocaine, methamphetamine, heroin.
You pretty much have free reign to coke up all you want, smoke all the crack you want, right?
I would imagine, I imagine that, as they don't test for it, I'd have to double check the testing protocols specifically, but I do not believe.
It's tragic, though. I mean, he was a great person in this community. He was, such a young guy. It's really sad.
Yeah.
So make of that what you will. Did we ever get the chance to talk about UFC 205?
We've talked about it in bits and pieces when they had announced parts of the card, but they finally announced most of the full card, and they came out with a really awesome promo last night.
Yeah, so we know that the main event has – I think they confirmed the main event, right after our last show, right?
So
the main event right now is Eddie Alvarez versus Conor McGregor. They had an outstanding press conference in New York to promote it. So the title fight is McGregor versus Alvarez for the lightweight title.
On the one hand, I'm not happy about that. Conor McGregor has not won a fight at lightweight in the UFC. And he's jumping over at least two, if not three or four, deserving contenders. And I don't like it. That being said, I understand giving the biggest draw you have at the moment the opportunity to make history on one of the biggest cards you've ever put out. So while I may not like it, and I don't, I do understand it. And,
you love Conor McGregor.
Love Conor McGregor.
You do so.
No, I really don't. I antagonize the cult of Conor on a regular basis, actually. Give any of those rounds to Nate Diaz?
All I remember is you doing backflips when he beat Chad Mendes.
Well, that's because I do backflips whenever anybody beats Chad Mendes. That had very little to do with McGregor and more to do with his opponent. McGregor's got a chance to make history, be the only guy in the UFC to hold two different weight classes titles at the same time. And he might do it.
Commanding New York. So they're giving the fans what they want here.
And Eddie Alvarez has a very good fan base in that area as well. It'll be interesting.
The fans can't complain about this fight because this is the fight the fans asked for. Eddie Alvarez is going to win this fight, Robert. I'm calling it right now.
I got to watch some tape.
I could be wrong, but Eddie is going to win this fight.
I got to watch tape to figure it out, to figure out where I finally fall on it. But both these guys have.
If the fight even stays intact. So there's that, too.
There is always that eternal qualifier that someone could fail a drug test or get injured or have visa issues.
Look what happened to UFC 200, which you were equally furious about, by the way. So I hope nothing happens because I want to see this card just as much as everyone else. So,
it's a tremendous card.
I hope it stays fairly intact. But I think she said something funny about Chris Weidman once probably getting injured while he was at the computer or something. So, Chris, please stay healthy. I want to see your fight as well. So that's the other thing.
Weidman versus Romero is interesting. That's a tough 5 minutes for Chris Weidman. After that, it's a tough 10 minutes for Romero. But looking forward to that one.
Yeah.
And I gotta watch tape because both McGregor and Alvarez have issues with defense. They both have good power. McGregor's a bit more of a power puncher.
I think Alvarez has better footwork, honestly. The thing is, have we ever even seen McGregor fight at lightweight?
Or in the UFC, no.
He's never fought at lightweight in the UFC. That's sort of my issue here. Both of the Diaz fights were at welterweight. I just don't feel good. I just can't. If McGregor was fighting and beating guys at lightweight, I would maybe feel a little better about picking him. But even though I think Alvarez maybe had an easier path than some to get to the lightweight title in the UFC, considering he lost to Conor McGregor in his UFC debut.
Cerrone.
He had a very underwhelming performance against Anthony Pettis. I mean, he did look great against Rafael Dos Anjos. I would have favored Rafael Dos Anjos against McGregor as well had that fight happened. There's no way, I'm just going to say right now, there's no way McGregor wins. There's no way he walks out of this being the first multi-title champion in the UFC. And that record is still going to belong to Dan Henderson after November in Madison Square Garden. So don't you worry, Robert.
I don't know. Conor's got a pretty good chance. He's actually bigger than Eddie Alvarez, I think. He's taller at any rate. I remember that distinctly.
Yes, but that's not going to win him the fight. It's not a high contest.
No, but it's a consideration.
Again, I
have to watch tape on both guys and find out where I land on that.
Even though, McGregor changed things up against Diaz, he's far too reckless with his chin.
He is, and Eddie Alvarez is very reckless. Alvarez loves a brawl. I don't know. The longer this goes, I can't even necessarily make a cardio argument. McGregor still had issues in the Diaz fight.
And he has better grappling and better wrestling.
I don't know. I'd say better wrestling, but overall grappling, McGregor's... He doesn't use it very often, but it's not the worst in the world.
It looked pretty bad against Nate Diaz.
Well, part of that is Nate Diaz is exceptional. And even then, he had some really good moments.
Nate Diaz is easy to take down and easy to out-grapple, really. Wrestlers have been doing it through his entire career.
Really good wrestlers have been doing it. Bad ones get taken down and submitted.
I'm picking Alvarez. There's no way. No chance in hell McGregor wins. So, everyone who wants to bet money, bet on Alvarez. That's the smart pick.
I don't know. I really have to think about that one. All right. Was there anything else that we needed to?
I think those are the major. I think we got all the major news pieces this week.
All righty, what do you got to plug?
All right, so reviewing Shin Godzilla for all the kaiju monster fans. Review coming up of the new Godzilla movie, not from Hollywood, from Toho Company, the people who created the franchise. So be on the lookout for that. Reviewing Destiny, Rise of Iron, and some other stuff in the works. And I don't know if I'm going to write what I'm going to write about this week. My column last week about UFC 204, thanks to everyone who read and commented on it. And, yeah, I'll see you guys next week. Dan Henderson is the greatest fighter of all time. Robert Winfrey knows he's going to be champion.
All right, Jeff, I'll see you next week.
Thank you.
All right. Next week, Jeff and I will be previewing UFC Fight Night 98, which doubles as the finale for the Ultimate Fighter Latin America Season 3, if anyone cares about that. I don't. But if you do, then you got that to look forward to. The main event is very good. Rafael Dos Anjos and Tony Ferguson is taking place in Mexico City. So be on the lookout for both the pollution and elevation to be a factor. Benil Dariush is fighting Rashid Magomedov on that card. Diego Sanchez is fighting Marcin Held. Really? That's a pretty gimme win for Sanchez. Alexa Grasso is making her UFC debut at strawweight. She's undefeated, fought four times for Invicta. She's someone to watch, certainly at strawweight. She's fighting Heather Jo Clark. And a lot of... A lot of just other stuff there. Benil Dariush and Rashid Magomedov ought to be interesting. Those are two very good fighters, but there's still several fights that have to be announced because we got a couple of weeks worth of, you know, Ultimate Fighter shows to go through to figure out who's in the finals and who they're going to bring back for an encore presentation on the prelims or some such. So these tough finale shows are a slog. Usually, and I'm really hoping that this one winds up okay. It's a great main event. It's a really good main event. So we'll be previewing that event next week. Since I have nothing to cover this Saturday, I figure I probably ought to write something. So be on the lookout. See if my byline pops up in the MMA Zone of 411mania.com. It might. All right, that's it. Again, thanks to everyone for listening. Thank you for reading and following along. Much appreciated. There's no movie review this week, actually, either. Last week, Mark and I pulled double duty. On Wednesday, we reviewed Deepwater Horizon, the Peter Berg-directed disaster movie about the explosion on the Deepwater Horizon a few years back in the Gulf of Mexico. So you can listen to that on the Rattlesnake Broadcasting Network. On Thursday, he and I reviewed Marvel's Luke Cage, which was an interesting discussion. Mark loved the show. I had much less emotional attachment to it. So you can get all of our thoughts on that whole process, the acting, some of the overarching stories, things of that nature. Again, no movie reviews this week. But I believe we will have one next week. So I'll plug that again on the show next week. So I'll hope to see you all back here next Sunday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We'll be back with another week of MMA goodness here on the 411 Ground and Pound Radio Show. Until then, for Jeff Harris, I'm Robert Winfrey, reminding everyone out there to please continue to be well, be safe, and behave.